For any of your online shopping at Amazon.com, please go to our website first, MysteriousTopics.com, and click on our link to Amazon, and you'll be supporting this podcast, and we would appreciate that very much. Everybody, and welcome to Mysterious Topics Podcast. This is John, and today I am joined by Zach Kitka. You might remember Zach from last spring, I think in April sometime. Chuck and I talked to him about he and his friends touring a abandoned asylum. Hi, Zach.
What's up, John? How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Not bad, not bad. Just got over a little bit of a cold, feeling a lot better now.
You've been staying out of abandoned asylums, I take it.
Yes. I actually have not gone back to anything like that yet.
Well, so you wanted to talk today about the topic of the ancient flood stories. What interests you about that?
It's been something I've been interested in a while. Basically, I grew up in the church hearing the Noah's Ark story. And always had questions, always had, curiosities about, like, different flood things. And when I got into high school, they started talking about, like, other ones. And up until that point, I was totally unaware that there was other flood stories. Whether I believed or not in the Noah story, I was just like, all right, well, that's the story of any kind of earthly flooding or anything like that, disaster, and that's it. And then I started to hear that there was all these different stories that spanned all these different cultures and time periods and everything. And I started looking into some of them, and it's just totally fascinating to me. It was very interesting to see that, like, there was these stories that seemed to span continents. And it was, totally piqued my interest there. So it's definitely an interesting topic.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun to talk about. So I think we should start probably with what we found to be the earliest flood story. You want to talk about that one a little bit?
Yeah. I was doing my research, came across that the earliest one I could find was in the Sumerian culture. And it comes from the Sumerian creation story. It was found on a tablet in Nippur, Iraq. I believe that's how you say it. I'm going to murder a lot of names today.
Oh, that's okay. That's what we're known for here on Mysterious Topics. So you'll fit right in.
Yeah. Some of them are rough to say, but yeah, I think it's Nippur.
Yeah. And also, just a quick aside on that tablet that you said that they found it on. I just think it's really fascinating that back then. Now, this on the website that I found on the Sumerian story, it says it's datable by its script to the 17th century BC. So that's a long time ago.
Yeah, I found that too, and it's very interesting to see, like, something that long ago surviving.
Yeah, and so these tablets, I believe they're called cuneiform tablets. What they are basically clay. I guess they molded clay, and I don't know this for sure. But I think they must have flattened it out like cookie dough, and then they imprinted their writing on it, and then they let it dry, and sort of like we would with when we're in third grade making clay pots and putting designs in them.
Yep.
But they survived all this time, and people were able to translate them. So I think that's pretty cool.
It is pretty interesting. It's got a silly thought, like, in the future after this civilization, if it falls apart, someone finds, like, third grade pottery and takes the writings of a third grade person to be the history of our culture would be kind of funny.
Not even that. What happens if the only thing that survives are all the Harry Potter books and they think that that's what happened?
1,000 years ago, these guys were doing magic.
Yeah, yeah, they were way ahead of us.
But yeah, they found these tablets in, oh goodness, there were parts missing. So I think that they kind of filled in some of what happened, I think, later on when they found some Babylonian tablets and Akkadian tablets. But the ones that they found were missing a couple pieces. I believe the first part here starts talking about creation and how their creation story goes. And then there's a break in the tablet, and it starts talking about how the gods are PO'd at the humankind. So yeah. Something happened in the middle there.
They don't have the part that describes why the gods were mad.
No, it gets me kind of curious.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that something? Well, just like all those these ancient finds, the Dead Sea Scrolls, for instance, you know how some of it's deteriorated and you're missing some key parts. It is. It's like it's like that old. There was an old show on TV, a game show where they would match things and then it would turn around. It'd show part of the puzzle and you'd be missing key parts.
Oh yeah,
At least there you got to see the answer at the end. Here we're never going to find it, I don't think.
No, you got to see what was behind the curtain, but this time we just got to kind of suppose. But it picks it up where the gods decide, we're not going to save mankind from this flood. So flood happens and starts to rock the boat, and it says it's going for 7 days and nights. Which, a lot of storms, man. These storms we're going to be talking about are some pretty nasty storms.
Yeah.
I know here, like, when it starts to rain for a couple days, like, everything starts to get all crazy and the creeks start to rise and stuff. I can imagine, like, if it rains nonstop for, like, a week.
Yeah.
It's pretty intense.
That usually doesn't happen around us, but there are parts of the world where they get monsoons, they call it, in that, where it does something like that. Yeah. And it's not good.
Yeah, it's definitely intense. So we're talking about some major moving and shaking. So while the storm is rocking the boat, Utu, the sun god, is said to appear, and the hero Ziud Sora makes an opening in the boat and ends up making a sacrifice to Utu, the sun god. Apparently, he's very happy that he survived.
Yeah.
Now, there's another break in the tablet, and the flood seems to be over at this point. The animals leave the boat, and Ziud Sora prostrates himself before An, the sun god, and Enlil, the chief of the gods. They end up giving him eternal life and taking him to a place called Dilmun, which, so I did some research here. It looks to be in modern day Bahrain, but it was, apparently like a,
it was almost like
a holy city. Yeah.
Yeah. The Sumerian Eden, it says on the website that I found this information on. That's what they're comparing it to.
Yeah. There's a couple other kings that I apparently had supposed to have, gone there seeking wisdom and making sacrifices and kind of like a very mystical place.
Yes.
So, but yeah. So he survives. He gets out, and the Earth is okay again. But bet he's pretty lonely at that point.
Yeah, and it does have a lot of similarities to some of the other flood stories that we're going to go through. But
yep.
So anyway, we'll just take note of that. It's very interesting how there are so many of these flood stories from around the world and in just about every different kind of culture.
Yeah, and as we're going to see, there's different variations. There's certain different parts of the story that changes, but a lot of it seems to be very similar even across different societies.
So yeah.
It's rather intriguing.
Okay, now there's...
go ahead.
Well, did you have any more on... Sumerian
one? That's all pretty much all that one put forth.
Then The next one, as far as chronologically anyway, that I found was the Babylonian Epic of Gilgamesh.
Yep, Epic of Gilgamesh.
Now that is in the same geographical area as the Sumerian run, right?
Yeah, it's...
That's modern-day Iraq, I believe, Babylonia.
Modern-day Iraq, yep. Yeah. I was reading here that the early poems of the Epic of Gilgamesh was dated from, oh goodness, the thing I got here is 2000 BCE, the earliest poems, and I think those were just like little manuscripts that they found. And then it's believed that they added some of the flood myth later, that the Epic of Gilgamesh started out and it didn't have the flood myth at first. And that it was added a little bit later on, I think by borrowing from the Sumerian text. And Gilgamesh actually isn't involved in the flood, but he goes to visit the flood hero. And the flood hero, and here's another butchering, his name, Utnapishtim, I think is the how you're going to pronounce
good.
That.
Yeah, that's how I would have said it.
I get a point there. We're good. Yeah, and Utnapishtim is tasked with building a ship called the Preserver of Life. And the god Ea tells him to demolish his house and build this boat with equal dimensions and cover it over like the Apsu. Now, I was kind of curious what the Apsu was, so I did some digging here and ran into something on the site abovetopsecret.com. And has a little bit of a poem, an early Babylonian poem talking about creation. And in the poem, it says, "In the beginning, there was not a piece of dry land in existence. All land was submerged under the veil of commingling waters. Apsu was the fresh water, and Tiamat was the salty water. The gods chant spells, and Apsu is put into a coma and sinks below the earth. Dry land comes into being, and Tiamat is the water above the earth. When humankind upsets the gods, the waters rise and mix together again to submerge the land," which was very interesting. So, sorry,
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking about how they obviously back then didn't know a lot of science. So, yeah, how they just decide that every time it floods, it's because the gods are upset with them.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Like, it's hard to put myself into that kind of culture. We don't have the scientific knowledge that we have now. We don't have the technology that we have now. So there's all this unexplained stuff going on. And human beings try to find an answer for everything.
Yeah.
And yeah, when there's a lack of an answer, sometimes we try to, you know, fill in the blanks and go, hey, this is happening. There has to be a reason. Boom. So,
right. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of wonderful legends and myths and stuff that come out of that. Some very great stories. I like it.
Yeah. And I was just thinking as you were talking that, you know, mentioning that they didn't have that kind of science back then and how they would be totally lost. And now I'm thinking maybe somebody will be listening to this 100 years from now or more, and they're thinking the same thing about us. Why? They didn't know anything. You know, this podcast is all about what they didn't know. And
yeah. It's funny how, like, our knowledge of situations changes as things go along. You know what I mean? So how many years ago the earth was flat and then, no, it's not flat. And then we have what we accept as scientific norms right now. And how many of those do we not know that are going to be changed by 100, 1,000 years from now? By the knowledge that we get as technology goes forward, it's an interesting thing.
Yes, it is. Okay, well, why don't we go into some of these other stories you covered? Which one do you want to talk about next?
We could go, let's talk about the Abrahamic one.
Okay.
All right, and this is our traditional Noah story. And makes up the chapters 6 through 9 of the book of Genesis. And once again, tells the story of how God is intent on returning to the Earth to its pre-creation chaotic state because mankind has become evil and there's a taint in humanity. And seems to be a theme that we keep on messing up and PO-ing God or the gods or whoever's in charge.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's we seem to have this tendency to get out of hand as human beings. But yeah, it's in this one it says that the heart of God was pained and that there was a taint in the land. And it goes on to talk about the Nephilim, which I found very interesting. They're another subject that I'm very interested in.
Yeah, we have touched on them a couple times in other podcasts, although I think it had to do with the whole djinn thing that we did.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that is. It's fascinating that's in the Bible. They're talking about what sounds like a different race of people that came down from the heavens.
Yep. Yeah, I got a passage here from the New International Version, Genesis 6:4, and it says, "The Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterwards, when the sons of God went down to the daughters of men and had children by them. They were the heroes of old, the men of renown, the legendary ones. The Lord saw how great man's wickedness on the earth had become, and that every inclination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil all the time." That's a pretty bad rapport on us there, but...
Yes.
So, yeah. Apparently, these Nephilim had commingled, and the Watchers, the Watchers were the ones who were supposed to be watching over mankind, but they ended up coming down and mingling with us and having these Nephilims tainting the human DNA there, and God was like, okay, no, let's not have that.
All right. So do you think that the Watchers were the Nephilim, or were the Watchers a separate group?
I think the Watchers were a separate group, and this is a... It's a high debate. I read a book. God, what was it called? It was Rise and Fall of the Nephilim. I cannot remember the name of the author. But there's a bunch of different theories on what they are. Some think they were angels that were put down on Earth to watch over mankind, and they felt lust in breeding with the human beings when they weren't supposed to, and it caused a taint in the human line. Some think that they were actual creations, like different, just a, almost like a different kind of human being. I have to find the book for that. I don't remember where I read that one at, but yeah, they think that they were a different kind of human, not quite human. It was kind of like right. Subhuman, but they were set there as kind of like guardians, and, it's pretty much the same thing as what the angels would have been. Some believe that they were fallen angels that were on the earth. It's not really known exactly what the Watchers were, but they were definitely different. The Nephilim were the offspring, and because of this meshing, I think, between the two, you end up with these weird either creatures or people with supreme strength, and like it says there, the beginning of legends. So, that's a bunch of podcasts there.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in that.
Yeah, so I'm thinking of a TV show that was on after the X-Files. I can't remember the name of it now. The one that was... Okay, I shouldn't even have brought it up now. I can't even think of the name of it. Where they had these guys that were dressed in the black suits and the hat, and they were really strange, really odd characters, and they were basically supposed to...
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah. Why can't I think of the name of that?
Goodness. It was a really good one. But yeah, they, guys with the, they were almost like MIB looking. They had these suits and these hats and stuff like that. They'd always be around when something weird or supernatural was going on.
Yeah. Right? And you get to know them as the series goes on, and they start to kind of interfere when they're not supposed to. And, it may have been, something that the Nephilim have done. Yeah.
Well, and there's some thoughts that, because it says they were on the earth in those days and they were on the earth afterwards. There's some thoughts that are legends of like these weird creatures and stuff like that, like Bigfoot and things like that, stem from the Nephilim, and that they were actually stories of these kind of human, kind of not creatures that ended up working their way into society and like living on the edge. That's one of the thoughts from that.
Yeah.
I gotta check out that show again. I totally forgot about that. That's a good one.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it now.
It had that guy from Dawson's Creek in it, Joshua.
Yeah.
Joshua whatever. And
Jackson? Oh, was it Jackson?
Joshua Jackson. Yeah, Joshua Jackson.
Yes, and it was like a one word, wasn't it?
I think it was one word.
And it was something like... oh, Jesus, right on the tip of my tongue. So let's see here. I just pulled him up, and what is he in?
It was really, it was like the new X-Files. It was...
They actually, yeah, they actually referred to the X-Files in the second year, maybe, when they were... They were going to close this thing down, and I'm pulling up Joshua Jackson's IMD here, so it's got to be in here. The Affair, Mighty Duck, Fringe.
There it is. Yeah, Fringe. Fringe was a good show. And I loved, like, goodness, you could just follow those episodes and do podcasts about like every episode subject. They had some really good ones. There was, and then they had the Watchers were pretty much on the edge of all like photography and stuff like that. There'd be something that goes down and they wouldn't even notice at first. They'd look later on and they'd see this dude with this black bowler hat in the corner, yeah, just like watching at stuff.
And I think the first episode where they introduced that guy, he was sitting in a diner across the street from a building that was about to either collapse or blow up or something. And he was ordering and he's like ordered, I forget, some kind of weird sandwich. And he put just a ton of, I don't know, sugar or salt or something on it. And, you know, people are looking at him like, what the heck is wrong with you, guy? Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So anyway. Interesting to note that a lot of similarities between the Abrahamic version and the Sumerian version.
Yes.
This would have happened quite a bit later than the Sumerian one. So I don't know. What do you think was going on there? Do you think these are two separate floods they're talking about? Or do you think the story, they sort of got the story and much like the game Telephone, it got passed down and so they kind of put in their names to make it more.
I kind of believe, yeah, with a lot of these, not just like this one in particular, that I think totally that there was a flood. Whether it was worldwide or not, I'm not 100% sold on either one. But I do believe there was one. And like you said, with Telephone, I think that a lot of these different stories, say you have, let's just call him Noah because we're talking about the Abrahamic one. Him and his son survive this flood. You know, they get out and, hey, let's repopulate the earth. Let's go to all four corners and yada, yada, yada. They go heading out into these areas and they have the story of what happened. But over thousands of years, people go, oh, yeah, so what happened in that story? Things get either exaggerated more or cut out. Or names get changed, or, you know, a society had been around for maybe 1,000 years and they start to have different values than another society. So they start stressing one or more of another thing. Yeah, I think it's just one of those historical telephone games.
And as we said, there were portions missing from the Sumerian text, the earliest one. As for the reasons why the gods were mad, and of course here they put in a reason, they just kind of put that in about the Nephilim and how God was angry with man and that sort of thing. And also you have to think, well, what was going on at that time? Possibly they came up with a story to warn the people of the time, you know, to act correctly.
Yeah, to be like, hey, you're going down a wrong path here. Look what happened before.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so why don't we touch on a couple of the other stories just so people are aware of. It's not just those three. It's virtually from just about every corner of the world.
Yep. There are a bunch of them. I was going to talk about the Irish one. Let's look at that one.
All right.
Okay. According to Irish mythology, in the Annals of the Kingdom of Ireland, or the Annals of the Four Masters, the flood occurred 2,242 years after creation. In the myth, they do use Noah, but he had another son who wasn't allowed on the ark. So besides for Shem, Ham, and Japheth, there was another son that was not allowed to go on. I don't know why, but poor guy just told that he's not allowed to go on the boat. So he goes and attempts to colonize Ireland with 54 persons, and they arrive in Ireland and are led by his daughter, Cesare, and the son is named Bith, and they're told to go to the western end of the world, so they end up going to Ireland. They go to escape the flood, but when they get there, pretty much everybody doesn't end up surviving. The only person that ends up surviving was a husband of one of the original people that ended up going over there. So they go to try to escape the flood, end up in Ireland, and pretty much one person survives. So
yeah, that's not a good number to keep the population going.
No, and it ends up that he turns into a fish and then turns into an eagle and turns into a hawk, and he lives for 5,000 years and becomes almost like a godlike figure, but he ends up becoming a human again and recounts the history of the people of Ireland, and that's how he ends up surviving there.
Oh, okay.
So that was an interesting one. It was a little off the wall, but
yeah.
I found it to be rather entertaining. There's Indian legend. Legend first appears in 700 to 300 BCE, and Matsuya, the incarnation of Lord Vishnu in the form of a fish, warns Manu about a coming flood and tells him to collect all the grains of the world into a boat, and in some versions, all the creatures as well. The flood destroys the earth, and Manu survives by boarding the boat and being pulled to safety. So, it's one from Lower Asia there. That was pretty interesting, too.
Yeah.
I like the fact that Lord Vishnu is in the form of a fish and just drags the boat to safety. That was a cool one. There's the Maori one. Did you look at the Maori one? That one's pretty interesting.
Yeah, New Zealand, yes.
Yeah. In their tradition, Ruatapu was the second son of the great chief Unuku, who belittled him for using the sacred comb of his older brother. That must have been a heck of a comb.
Yeah.
But his brother's name was Kahutia Te Rangi. And because he was belittled by his father, Ruatapu decides to entice all the children of the nobility into his canoe. So he gets them all in his canoe, and he takes them out to the middle of the ocean, and he sinks it.
Yeah, nice so, guy.
Really nice guy there.
Yeah.
So his brother's on the canoe, but ends up surviving by the help of a whale, and is known thereafter as an easier name as Peikia. Well, easier in relative terms.
Relatively, yes.
So Ruatapu he isn't satisfied by just taking all the nobles' children and drowning them in the ocean. He convinces the gods to take the tides and destroy the land and its inhabitants as well. So his brother ends up fleeing to high ground and has ended up being saved by the goddess Ma'oa Kuramanu. And he ends up getting away. So all this time, he tries to get his brother, and his brother ends up escaping. So that one was fun. There's another one from North America, the Hopi legend.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You familiar with that one?
Yes, I think I am. I'm trying to find if I have it somewhere here, but why don't you go ahead and start talking about that.
Okay, yeah, the Hopi legend, in one version of the Hopi legend, Tawa, the creator, ends up destroying the third world with a great flood. Now, the Hopi believed that there's been four worlds in the existence of history, and we're on the fourth one right now. The other three were destroyed when humanity became extremely wicked. And at the end of each world, the most pure get saved and transported to the next world.
The Hopi also are the ones, I believe they say that they got assistance from other people. I forget what they call them, but it's basically translates to the Ant people, where they went underground, the Hopi underground with them to save them.
At the end of each world, yeah, there's a different way that they survived. I think the Ant people was one of them. And there's always this character, at least that I'm the research that I did, called Spider Grandma, who ends up either leading them underground or leading them. In this one, she gets these reeds and seals them, seals all the righteous people into these reeds, and use them as boat. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Use the reeds as boats. And whenever they get onto a small piece of dry land, they see nothing else but water all around them. And then Spider Grandma shows up to them and says, well, what you're going to have to do is get on some more of these reeds and go from little island to little island until you find yourself in the new world. Which is very interesting.
Yeah.
It kind of leads to a story of how the Hopi actually got to North America.
Right, because Thor Heyerdahl proved that you could build a boat out of reeds and sail across the ocean.
Yep. So, yeah, I found that one to be extremely interesting as well. That was because it not just has like a, not like a flood or a destruction thing to it. It actually gives a pretty good indication of how a certain society arrived on this continent. So that was fun.
Right. And then, of course, Spider Grandma gives us proof that there really was a Spider-Man.
Yep. I mean, hey, it's all in the family there.
Yeah. So, as we said, I mean, there's so many of these stories here. We can't even hardly get to them all, but I know the Incas had a story of a great flood where two people repopulated the earth. They survived in sealed caves. That's another one. Wow, there's just so many. There's one in the Hawaiian culture. A human couple, Nu'u and Lilinoe, survived the flood on top of Mauna Kea. That's on the Big Island. Nu'u made sacrifices to the moon, to whom he mistakenly attributed his safety. Cain, the creator god, descended to earth on a rainbow, explained Nu'u's mistake, and accepted his sacrifice. So, I don't know. Are there any other ones that you found particularly interesting?
There was the Greek. The Greek have three different floods, actually. Greek mythology describes three floods, the flood of Ogyges, Deucalion, and Dardanus. And the Ogean flood is named after the mythical king Ogean, king of Attica. And the flood was said to cover the whole world, and that was the first one. The second one, the Deucalion legend, has the titan Prometheus advising his son to build a chest, and all other men on the earth perish except for a few who escaped to high mountains. and Deucalion and his wife float the chest for 9 days and nights and end up on a peak. And after they get out, they make a sacrifice to Zeus. And at the bidding of Zeus, Deucalion throws behind him stones, and those stones become men. And his wife throws behind herself stones, and those stones become women. And then they proceed to repopulate the earth. I thought that one was pretty cool. If only relationships were that easy, too, of building families. Just, yeah, hey, toss a couple stones, and here you go.
Yeah. That reminds me of the original Jason and the Argonauts movie from way back when. I saw that as a kid, and I thought it was the coolest movie in the world back then, but actually saw it at the theater, and where the guy, I forget who it was, but he basically throws out a bunch of teeth from skeletons that he found, and the teeth grew into these skeleton warriors, these just skeletons with swords, and they started attacking Jason and the Argonauts.
I remember seeing that, yeah. My grandma used to watch Turner Classic Movies a lot, and that one was on there a bunch of times. There was another one. Sinbad was another one that was on there a lot.
Yeah. Those are some really good movies for that time.
Classics. Definitely classics.
Yeah. Okay. There's another one. I don't know. Is there other ones? I know that China is another big one.
China's another big one. I didn't research that one a lot.
Yeah, well, it's Su Jing, or the Book of History, and they claim it was probably written around 500 BC or earlier, states in the opening chapters that Emperor Yao is facing the problem of floodwaters that reach to the heavens.
Yes, yeah, I remember that. Go ahead.
Well, there's not a whole lot more information on there, but a bunch of folk legends contain references to a woman named Nuwa. Nuwa repairs the broken heavens after a great flood or calamity and repopulates the world with people. And okay. Apparently there's all kinds of different versions of the legend, but they have them in China too, so.
Yeah, like we said earlier, they're all over the place. And it leads me to believe that there was something that went down. There may have been multiple.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it doesn't mean that it was a worldwide cataclysm, although we'll talk about this coming up now as we discuss what we think happened, that there could have been a couple different disasters that were nearly worldwide that may have affected the world
depending on which area you were in. And,
yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm talk about get into some scientific evidence. They looked at something called the glacial periods, and talk about coming out of an ice age and ice melting and stuff like that, and being in certain areas that were not usually affected by having a lot of ice or water and stuff like that. If an ice age is melting and, you know, the water levels are rising, it could create, in a lot of areas that normally wouldn't have a lot of water, flooding and something that they're totally not used to. And it would be a cataclysmic event to them.
Yeah.
Be like, holy crap, where is this all coming from?
Yeah. I just wanted to mention one other flood story before we go on to our theories. Just because of our coverage, my coverage, along with Jordan, from the Nighttime Podcast on Oak Island, and this has to do with the Mi'kmaq, which were the native people of the area of Nova Scotia. And in Mi'kmaq mythology, evil and wickedness among men causes them to kill each other. This causes great sorrow to the creator sun god, who weeps tears that become rain sufficient to trigger a deluge. The people attempt to survive by traveling in bark canoes, but only a single man and woman survived to populate the earth. So even in a small culture on one little corner of the earth, they have a very similar story to all the others.
Yeah. This keeps pointing back to me that there definitely was something going on. And whether... I'm trying to think. Brain just went bye-bye there. But well, yeah, it's go ahead.
Well, I was going to say how you mentioned about some sort of flooding. They said was what 12,000 years ago or something that you mentioned.
Yeah, there was flooding that happened after the Ice Age, I believe, and they were talking about glaciating and how in a certain area, at certain times, whenever an Ice Age, you know, hypothesized ends, that water goes and floods a bunch of areas. A lot of areas end up getting totally even reshaped.
Yeah.
From what they normally were, you know what I mean? With the lack of ice and things, you know, moving around and then refreezing or moving, they find a lot of artifacts up on mountains and stuff like that that look like they were submerged and underwater. And
also fossils from a deep sea that are at the tops of mountains.
Yeah, and one camp will say, well, that proves, you know what I mean? There was this worldwide flood. It covered the tops of all mountains. And yeah, it was all over the earth and everything was there. The other side pretty much counters with, well, when things freeze and refreeze and you get the glaciers moving over, you know, different parts of land, it carries things to these different places. And if you have an ice age where a lot of things, a lot of water is freezing and moving around, you can have something that was originally down in the bottom of the ocean, moving over thousands and thousands of years to a high ground.
Yes.
So.
And also, I know people out there are thinking right now, well, yeah, if the glaciers melted, I mean, there's enough water there, but it would take a very long time for them to naturally melt. And it would be so gradual that the people would be able to react over tens of years and centuries and moving gradually inward as the water line increased. But, and here's where we have evidence of what may have happened, which may be a good explanation. And I got a book last year titled Magicians of the Gods. It's Graham Hancock's book, where it's a follow-up to his original Fingerprints of the Gods book that came out some 20 plus years ago. And he does a lot of research with Randall Carlson, who is many things, but he has been studying the geological formations. And I'm just going to read this. This is from the flap from the book. And okay. I think it will give the whole story here. Near the end of the last ice age, 12,800 years ago, a giant comet that had entered the solar system from deep space thousands of years earlier broke into multiple fragments. Some of these struck the Earth, causing a global cataclysm on a scale unseen since the extinction of the dinosaurs. At least 8 of the fragments hit the North American ice cap, while further fragments hit the Northern European ice cap. The impacts from comet fragments a mile wide approaching at more than 60,000 miles an hour generated huge amounts of heat, which instantly liquidized millions of square kilometers of ice, destabilizing the Earth's crust and causing the global deluge that is remembered in myths all around the world. A second series of impacts equally devastating, causing further cataclysmic flooding, occurred 11,600 years ago, the exact date that Plato gives for the destruction and submergence of Atlantis. The evidence revealed in this book shows beyond reasonable doubt that an advanced civilization that flourished during the Ice Age was destroyed in the global cataclysms between 12,800 and 11,600 years ago, but there were survivors known to later cultures by names such as the sages, the magicians, the shining ones, and the mystery teachers of heaven. They traveled the world in their great ships, doing all in their power to keep the spark of civilization burning. They settled at key locations, Göbekli Tepe in Turkey, Baalbek in Lebanon, Giza in Egypt, ancient Sumer, Mexico, Peru, and across the Pacific, where a huge pyramid has recently been discovered in Indonesia. Everywhere they went, these magicians of the gods brought with them the memory of a time when mankind had fallen out of harmony with the universe and paid a heavy price, a memory and warning to the future. for the comet that wrought such destruction between 12,800 and 11,600 years ago may not be done with us yet. Astronomers believe that a 20-mile-wide dark fragment of the original giant comet remains hidden within its debris stream and threatens the Earth. An astronomical message encoded at Göbekli Tepe and in the Sphinx and the pyramids of Egypt warns that the great return will occur in our time. So that gives you something to think about.
That's a wild one there. Yeah.
And I just want to also say that both these gentlemen, Graham Hancock and Randall Carlson, appeared on Joe Rogan's podcast within the last couple months. And, you know, Joe Rogan has these really long podcasts. I think it's almost 4 hours. Almost 4 hours.
Some of them are pretty
long,
yeah.
Yeah, and these guys are talking all about it, but I will have a link to the YouTube of that podcast where it is a video, and they do show Randall went out into the field and shows these many spots in North America where this huge deluge of flood. Now, you have to remember the ice caps, the glaciers over Canada and North America, right where I am right now in Wisconsin, was 2 miles of ice on top of the land. And if a comet, a huge comet or fragments hit, and it would have instantly liquidized 2 miles
of
ice.
That's a lot of liquid water there. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting to watch. Anybody that is fascinated by this, there are some spots along where you can kind of fast forward and find where Randall shows just out in the sticks somewhere where there's a lot of, there's some little mountains. He shows patterns of, if you've ever walked on a beach and you'll see when the tide goes out and there's those little ripples in the sand, and how the pattern of the huge amount of water coming in and then moving out makes that. Well, he's showing that out in Western United States and Canada in areas, and he shows that those ripples are the size of 5 to 7 story building, these ripples.
Wow.
Which they can tell how much water that would have taken to make that compared to what it takes to make those little ripples less than an inch high on the beach. So I don't know. I find that stuff fascinating.
A lot of water. Yeah, that is really fascinating. And yeah, I mean, comet hits the Earth and melts a ton of that water. It's definitely a good way to say that this happened. I mean, it definitely makes a lot of sense. I want to get into Graham Hancock's books. There's a lot of theories that society was very advanced before our time, and it kind of like goes in cycles, and his books are really good with that. I definitely want to check them out. I have not had a chance, but...
Yeah, and I think he's probably the best researcher in this field today. He's kind of an alternate theory to the ancient aliens where they claimed that all this stuff had to come from somebody that was a lot smarter that came here from another planet. And he's kind of showing where there could have been advanced civilizations that originated on this planet.
Yeah, definitely. Human beings are pretty intelligent, you know, and given the right kind of situations, they can build and do a lot of things. So I definitely think he has some really good points there.
Yeah, and I just think he's just been so great because he continues on with his research, even though most of it goes against traditional thoughts of how man was way too primitive, and this is the most technologically advanced that we have been, which is the traditional thought, and he's kind of going against all that, and it takes... You got to be pretty
take some chutzpah.
Yeah,
it really does.
Yeah, to stand your ground, and he does it. And I don't know. I just think he's great. So yeah, I would definitely recommend his books or listening to him on any podcast you can find.
Yep, definitely want to. So all right, do we have any more scientific stuff to look at here? I pretty much exhausted anything I have on paper here. So.
I don't, because there isn't a lot out other than, as I said Graham Hancock, Randall Carlson, and there's a few other people like that, I think, but they're the most prominent and the most up to date with the book just coming out within a year or so. And I think it's the best argument for it. All the other traditional science in that is still, they just are going with the mainstream story.
Yeah. The more and more I looked, like, I was trying to find a lot of scientific facts, and I really couldn't, because a lot of scientists just throw this into the realm of, like, pseudoscience. Anything having to do with floods and great deluge and stuff like that was automatically pegged into, well, you know, this doesn't quite make sense with the geological record. This doesn't make sense with this, blah, blah, blah. And like you said, it takes a real chutzpah for a scientist to, like, put his livelihood on the line and say, all right, well, this happened, you know, and really dig down into it. So I'd be interested to read a couple more books on it. I really want to see if there are some scientists who did a little more digging into it.
Yeah, well, their argument before was always, according to Graham Hancock, I think he says this in Joe Rogan's podcast, about they would always say, well, where did all the water come from? There's no evidence that it would have taken so much water. And now, as he's saying, they have come up with a theory which shows where all the water came from.
Where all the water came from, yeah.
And I'd just like to see people, you know, scientific study of this more, you know, to look at it instead of just saying, well, they're just, you know, just ignoring it.
Yeah, which tends to be a thing. I mean, when there's doctorates on the line and stuff like that, I can't judge the guys. I mean, they spend a lot of their lives researching and studying, and something comes out that's a little different. You may not want to just throw yourself in there right off the bat, but I think it needs to be taken at least semi-seriously.
Right. You don't have to agree with it, but just check it out and see if it isn't.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard anybody coming out since the book came out over a year ago, and with all this evidence that they're showing that they have on video, and that of anybody saying they're wrong, that's not what it is.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, hey. I mean, hey. I hope that it continues.
Yeah. Well, the scary part is I read that last paragraph about that there may be a 20-mile wide dark fragment of the original giant comet that they claim did all of this is still. It's still floating around out there, and it's got our name on it.
that's a thought that I don't want to entertain too much. Wasn't there supposed to be an asteroid that was coming our way in the next how many years or something like that too?
Oh yeah, they know.
I think there was. Yeah,
I forget the name of that one, but there's one that went by recently. I think it's coming back in, like, I don't know, the year 2030 something.
Okay.
But there's a lot of things out there, I think, that they don't even know about.
Yeah.
And all of these, you know, people are aware of the Perseid meteor shower and the Leonids shower. That Perseid, I think, is in August, and the Leonids is in November, I believe. There's more than that. And they all come around the same time of year. And what that is exactly this, that we're spinning around the sun, and we go through the path of an ancient comet or asteroid where there's still debris, and that's what we're seeing. So with them saying that there's a piece out there that we should still worry about, it's not at all unreasonable.
No. All right.
Okay, well, so I think that does it. I can't think of anything else.
No, I'm just keep on thinking of silly things to anecdote, so yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. Well, I want to thank you, Zach, for suggesting this topic. I think it is a good one, and I think people will enjoy it.
And I want to thank you for having me on, John. It was fun again, as always.
Okay. So, for more on this and other topics, you can go to our website, mysterioustopics.com. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.